Exploring the importance of having the right skills to succeed, this is Skillfully Speaking, supported by Babcock International, presented by Skills Ambassador Jackie Grubb.
Welcome to Skillfully Speaking. I'm your host, Jackie Grubb, and today I'm delighted to speak with a true trailblazer in politics and skills, Baroness Jackie Smith. A passionate advocate for education, public service and leadership, and now serving as Skills Minister. She made history as the UK's first female Home Secretary. Baroness Jackie Smith, welcome to Skillfully Speaking.
Hello, Jackie.
Hi.
Lovely to be joining you today.
It's really, really, really lovely to meet you and see you also. Oh my gosh, what a timely podcast. I'm going to go straight into my first question. And being an absolute advocate for Strictly Come Dancing, I want to ask you a question about Strictly first. So you've built a successful media career alongside public service, appearing on programmes like Strictly Come Dancing and Good Morning Britain. But what drew you to broadcasting, and what skills did you bring from politics to television?
Well, I like to think of this as being almost the fourth period of my career that I'm in now, Jackie, because I had 11 years teaching after university. Then I had 13 years in Parliament, being elected in 1997, and 10 years as a minister. Then, as is the way in politics, I had to build a new career because I lost my seat in 2010. So I did a whole range of different things, actually, between 2010 and 2024, like chairing NHS trusts and, as you say, doing some media as well. So I think in terms of the general political commentary that I did, like Good Morning Britain, I brought the skills of understanding how politics works. Hopefully from teaching, I brought the skills of being able to explain things in a relatively straightforward way. But I'm afraid if you did follow me on Strictly, you will have seen that I didn't bring very many skills at all, having never really danced before. And therefore, although I had an absolutely fantastic time and I did what I think you should always do, which is I threw myself into it almost literally, I didn't last very long, but I absolutely loved it.
Who is your partner in Strictly?
My partner was Anton.
Oh!
Yes, it was his last year as a dancer.
Oh.
Because after I was booted out, he then went on to the judges panel. Just let me say, there were only three judges at the beginning of that series, which was during the pandemic. And quite often people compare the scores that I got with scores that people are getting today. And I just want to be clear, my scores came out of 30, not out of 40. So it wasn't as bad as some people seem to want to suggest.
We'll take that point very seriously, Jackie. And are you watching it at the moment?
I am. I don't get to watch it every week, but I do carry on watching, particularly the results show, although I do know the agony of standing there and
I can imagine.
Knowing that you're going to go through to next week.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. I couldn't resist it. But, you know, it makes that more of a bigger person than what actually people see on a daily basis, isn't it? Because everybody's a human being at the end of the day. But going back to the teacher, and obviously that's dear to me because in my day I was a teacher and now I have the privilege of being the CEO principal of City College Plymouth. You had an incredible journey, like you've just explained to us, from teacher to MP and to the UK's first female Home Secretary. What first inspired you to enter politics, and how did your early years in education shape your approach to leadership?
Well, I've always been interested in politics for as long as I can remember. My mum and dad were both local councillors. My mum tried to run for parliament, actually, at one point. So I came from a very political background. And even whilst I was teaching, I was a local councillor. When I was a student, I was involved in student politics. So I'm afraid I was sort of destined right from an early age to want to try and get into parliament. I first stood for election in 1992, didn't win, and then was elected in 1997. So I suppose, as I say, as well as from teaching, I hope being able to condense and explain information. I think what I also brought was an understanding of some of the policy areas that I then went on to be a minister in, because this is my third time round now in the Department for Education. I did it twice in the last Labour government. Now, I also did other things which I hadn't had a working experience of, because that's the nature of ministerial life. You go from one portfolio to another, particularly when you're in the House of Commons. But I always, when I was teaching, and in fact, when I was younger than that, wanted to ensure that people had the best possible chance in life. That's why I went into education, because I think that is an absolute route to opportunity for people actually throughout their lives, not just as young people. And then I realized that there were other things that were stopping people getting on in life that I also wanted to do something about. And politics was the best route to be able to make that sort of difference.
Wow. And I'm in my 39th year in further education. So obviously education, making a difference to people's lives, social mobility is absolutely dear in my heart. And I can say that it's FE and skills turn at the moment. Very excited in terms of the opportunity that's going forward. And as you know, the government's new white paper sets out a major reform in post-16 education, including the introduction of V levels. So we're used to T levels, but now, you know, we've heard in the last few weeks that there are going to be V levels. So what was the main driver behind this new vocational route?
Well, first of all, Jackie, I think you're absolutely right that this is the time for skills and FE, because in many ways, what it does is it brings together two absolutely crucial objectives of the government. First of all, what we call our opportunity mission. How can we help people to get on in life, to get into the jobs and the opportunities that they want, regardless of where they start in life? And that needs a great education system, and it then needs a skills system that can take people through to those. But also, of course, we've got to grow the economy, and that means filling the skills gaps which are currently holding us back. So bringing those things together means that this is absolutely the time. So the white paper covers the whole system from 16 onwards. When people get to 16, they're making a decision about what they then want to do in the next stage of their education, possibly going into work, but often staying in school or in college. And at the moment, of course, we know that you have a choice of if you want to take an academic route of A-levels, if you know what you want to do and you want a more technical route of T-levels. But there will be quite a lot of people who won't be completely clear they know what occupation that they want to go into. So a T level, taking up the time of 3 A levels, might not be what they want to pursue. But they also know that they learn better by doing, by applying their learning. So they don't really want to do the academic route through A levels. So V levels will enable students who want that applied sort of learning to be learning about a particular vocational area, to be able to do that without putting all of their eggs into one basket. So we think we're consulting on this, but we're seeing V-levels as perhaps being the size of an A-level. And then you can combine V-levels to make that program that will give you the way of learning that you want and give you an opportunity to try out different vocational areas and then to go on to university or to a more advanced apprenticeship or technical course afterwards.
How privileged are we to get that hot off the press as well? So that was a really good description of all those people that are thinking, what's a V level and what's it all about? So thank you for that. So the white paper also highlights new level 2 pathways. So how will these changes improve outcomes for students who might not follow the traditional academic route?
Well, what happens when you get to age 16 is quite often there are a whole range of different routes that you can go through. It's actually pretty confusing. There are sort of thousands of qualifications at level 2 and level 3. So one of the reasons for introducing V-levels is actually to try to make it a bit more straightforward which route you go through. But also you may have got to the age 16 and perhaps you haven't got the levels in your GCSEs that you would need to go on to a V level or a T level or even into work. So what we've said is, look, let's make 2 clear routes for people who want to think about where they're going after the age of 16. One of them would be if you know that you want to do further study, I want to do A levels or V levels or T levels, but I'm not quite there yet. You could go through the further study route. If you know that you want to go into an apprenticeship or into work, but you just need a bit more to get you there, then you could go through what we call the occupational route. And then it's much clearer, how do I get to where I want to get to? And there's a more clear and less confusing route for you to do that.
Great.
If you want to build on your skills and get yourself on the right path to success, visit the City College Plymouth website, cityplym.ac.uk. You can hook up with courses, download information packs, guides, and much more. Or find us on social media. We're Skillfully Speaking Podcast on Instagram and Skillfully Speaking on Facebook and LinkedIn. Skillfully Speaking, where hidden skills are revealed. Now back to the conversation.
Where does English and math sit in all of this? We have hundreds and hundreds of students that resit their English and maths and take their English and maths. And isn't it the plan to end the resits treadmill in maths and English? That's a major shift, isn't it? And how will the new level one qualifications better support students to build, like you say, their confidence and progress to that next stage?
Yeah, well, the first thing, Jackie, is that English and maths will stay really important. And of course, getting that grade four at GCSE is the way in which you can open lots of doors later on in life. So we still want people to be getting to that level if they haven't already done by the time they leave school. But as you say, what was happening was lots of people were retaking their GCSE, failing, retaking it again, failing. Now, nobody feels as if they're making progress or feels competent if that's what happens to them. So for some people who perhaps didn't get that close to their grade four, what we're saying is, look, it makes a lot more sense if you do a qualification that enables you to build your confidence, build your understanding of the basics that you need in English and maths, and then demonstrate that you've got that, and then go on to your GCSE afterwards. And we think that's the way to build up people's knowledge, the skills that they need in English and maths, and their confidence as well, and to get more people to that level that will then open things up for them further on in life.
And that's going to be a fundamental shift, isn't it? Absolutely fundamental, and really excited to see what progress is made with that. You've spoken about the importance of supporting disadvantaged and vulnerable students. Can you just elaborate a little bit more on high needs and SEND?
Yeah, I know that in further education colleges across the country, there is really good work going on to support young people who perhaps by virtue of their special needs or their disability have not achieved everything that they and we would want them to have done at school. So as we're reforming the SEND system, we're also thinking about how does that then feed through post-16 to the sort of support that young people will need in order to make the most of the educational opportunities that are being offered to them.
Fantastic. Thank you. So we've talked about our students, we've talked about our vulnerable and disadvantaged students, and we've talked about qualification reforms. Now, here in the City of Plymouth, our employers and our stakeholders are just so supportive in everything we do, and they're part of our ecosystem. So for employers listening, what role can business and industry play in helping to shape the success of the new V-levels, but in every skill pathways that we've been talking about today?
Yeah, I think what's really important, both in T-levels and in V-levels, in apprenticeships, obviously, is what young people are learning, the work that they're doing, is linked directly to what employers have said to us the occupation needs, the occupational standards, in other words. So employers have already played a role in helping to shape what those qualifications look like. But if somebody is doing a course in college, let's say, being able to have a placement, particularly if you're on a T-level, but in other courses as well, needs employers to be willing to provide those placements. Now, lots of employers think, oh, you know, could be a bit tricky. How do I go about doing it? Well, first of all, there are people, including our T-level ambassadors, the colleges themselves, who can help you with what's necessary. But the other thing to say is it's a massive win-win quite often for employers because they take somebody on to a placement. They get to see that student actually in the workplace. And quite often, those are the students that then go on to work with that employer. So there's real advantages for employers in doing that. Working alongside colleges, helping to design the courses that are being offered, providing the sort of up-to-date equipment where possible. And sometimes as well, thinking in terms of staff, well, look, we know that we've got staff here who've got real expertise in particular vocational areas. Perhaps we could find a way for them to support the teaching in college as well. Perhaps, you know, go in a day a week or some other way in which they could support that. So FE colleges have got a brilliant relationship. They're often very innovative and good in the way in which they engage with employers. We just need employers to recognise that, to step up, and then they'll see all the benefits that come from better skilled people coming into the workforce and the direct relationship that they can build with them as well.
Yeah, and I know that our employers really want to help and support, you know, whether it's a large employer or our SMEs. And sometimes it's just sort of forging that relationship to know that they can do it sometimes. And, you know, we've had lots and lots of feedback with that. So, yeah, thank you for that. So, Jackie, when mentoring others, how do you share your experiences in a way that connects and inspires?
Well, I hope that I'm able to say to the other women that I support and mentor, first of all, you belong in these jobs. Quite often what we see is women thinking to themselves, well, look, I haven't ticked every single box in this job description, so am I really going to be able to do it? Whilst quite often men feel that as long as they can do just a part of the job, then it's fine for them to step in. So believe in yourself, step up and take advice. Build a group of people around you that help you, particularly in a leadership job. You know, understand that no leader does it all on their own. Building that team and having the type of relationship with them that enables them to support you and perhaps to fill the gaps in the things that you can do is an enormously important part of leadership. This idea that there are hero leaders that can do everything, I just think is absolute nonsense. And even if they think they can, they're generally not very good leaders. So building that experience, building that team, networking, finding the people who will support you when you're in the leadership position, understanding that you'll need a bit of resilience. You'll need people both probably in your professional and your private life who will support you to do what you need to do. Those are the things that I quite often talk to people about. But the most important thing is give it a go, because I'm sure you will be bringing to this role a different way of thinking about things, an important perspective that will actually enable you to do the job well, and the organisation that you're leading will benefit from that.
And all those qualities take a lot of, as you say, resilience and energy, and we are all human beings at the end of the day, and we're nothing without our health, are we? So you have got a challenging, demanding job role. What do you do to look after your own health and well-being?
My office will tell you I'm quite strict about saying on a Friday, it doesn't always work, but I'm quite strict about saying I need to be back in Malvern to do yoga. I have joined the gym, although I don't get there as much as I would like to, because I have to go first thing in the morning and sometimes bed wins over the treadmill or the weights. One of the things I learned the last time I was in ministerial life is that sometimes when you come under pressure, you have a tendency to think, right, if only I just sort of buckle down a bit harder or just work a bit harder, I'll get through it. Actually, what I've now learned is that sometimes taking a few minutes to just stand and breathe, to look out of the window, if you can take a little walk around, just helps you to refocus yourself and then come back with energy. And then make sure that you make a bit of time to have some fun as well. I mean, I'm quite lucky in my job in the Lords that, unlike when I was in the Commons, when I was a constituency MP, I don't go home at the weekend and have to do a lot of constituency work. I have other work to do, but I will always make sure that I do something a bit fun as well at the weekend.
Brilliant. And what do you eat?
Too much. They've got a very nice canteen in the basement of the Department for Education. And I quite like to have an omelette and some beans for my breakfast.
Yep.
And then I try to drink plenty of water. And then I will head off in the evening, because one of the things about the House of Lords is we have to stay here quite late. So I will probably have something to eat here then in the evening.
So high protein, lots of yoga, lots of movement, a bit of breath work I was thinking that was coming through there.
Yes, you're making it sound incredibly sort of healthy and organised. If only it was that good.
I'm trying to help.
That's what I'm working on, Jackie.
Yeah, we're always working on our own personal journey with that, aren't we? We really are. We all can't be good all the time, can we? And how do you juggle that family life and then that personal life for yourself? And then obviously the huge commitment to your job role on a daily basis, especially at the moment.
Well, of course, the last time round when I was a minister and a member of parliament, I had two small children. One of them I actually had after I came into parliament. I was very lucky that my then husband played a very big role in helping to sort of support me and looked after them in the constituency whilst I came to London. They've grown up now, so I don't have that challenge this time round in government. But I do nevertheless think it's important to keep in touch with your friends, to keep in touch with your family. That's the perspective that quite often enables you to have the energy then to bring back to work and carry on with it. So you have to find the way and the people to support you to enable you to do what you want to do. And that's where not just, you know, your professional team and networks, but your personal networks, your personal team, asking for help from friends and family when you've got the sort of job that we've got, Jackie. I think that is really important.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with that, Jackie. And thank you so much, Baroness Jackie, for sharing the latest news from the most recent white paper, sharing your personal views of how you keep yourself healthy and well and about your family. And I've really enjoyed our general discussion today. So many, many thanks to you.
Thank you, Jackie. And, you know, best wishes to you and the college and keep up the good work.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Skillfully Speaking is supported by Babcock International. Visit babcockinternational.com. Presented by Jackie Grubb. Produced by Paul Philpott. Production support by Lisa Hartwell. Edited and mixed by Martin Burgess Moon. Video content by Mark Stevenson. Coordinated by Louise Greenleaf. Produced by Fresh Air Studios. Copyright City College Plymouth. All rights reserved.